If there's one event in history that serves as a never-ending source of book ideas, then it's the Kennedy assassination. The conspiracy theories about JFK, the cover-ups, the hypotheticals, the confessions, and on it goes. The tragic events of November 1963 lack final resolution because millions of files pertaining to the assassination will remain under lock and key until at least 2017. But the iceberg of secrecy has begun to thaw. 2 years ago, the National Archives released millions of pages of previously classified documents. Historian and author Lamar Waldron, whose first book on the assassination, Ultimate Sacrifice, took more than 20 years to research, has personally trawled through all these newly released files. The result is an 800-page expose, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination, which contains startling new information about the president's murder and about the assassinations of Bobby Kennedy and civil rights leader Martin Luther King. Lamar Waldron is speaking to the book show's Linda Lopresti.
We luckily found an amazing amount of material that confirmed what we had written in Ultimate Sacrifice and that went beyond what we had written in Ultimate Sacrifice. So it was great to get what we had done and worked on for 20 years. And when I say we, I mean my co-author Tom Hartman, who helped with a lot of the very early research on the book. And Tom and I had begun the whole project by talking first with one Kennedy associate and eventually interviewing more than two dozen people who had worked with John and Robert Kennedy. And they told us about the events that we wrote about in our first book, Ultimate Sacrifice. They also led us to thousands of documents at the National Archives in the United States. And I even worked behind the scenes with a government committee in the 90s to help identify additional documents and to get those files released. Well, that committee released 4.5 million files. So as you can imagine, that's a lot of files to go through. But again, because I had the advantage of having the knowledge that these people that had worked with John and Robert Kennedy had, I was able to pretty quickly zero in on the most important files. And in some cases, I'm the only person that has located these files at the National Archives, the most prominent being the uncensored, essentially full confession to JFK's assassination by one of the most notorious mafia godfathers of the 1960s, a man by the name of Carlos Marcello.
Yes, but we should remind our listeners that in 1979, a government investigation into the assassination found that Carlos Marcello had the means, the motive, and the opportunity to kill the president. But what you're saying, Lamar, is that you actually found uncensored FBI files detailing his confession to the assassination.
That's exactly right. The congressional committee that concluded that in 1979 had actually had a lot of files denied to them by the CIA and by the FBI. But so the congressional committee was able to conclude that Marcello was likely behind the assassination along with another godfather and that a conspiracy was likely involved, but they weren't able to say exactly how it was done. Well, in 1985, just a few years after that, the FBI had this remarkable undercover operation against Marcello while he was in federal prison. And while in prison, Marcello made his clear confession in 1985 to a reliable FBI informant in front of a witness. And I'll read it to you right out of the FBI files. Here's one of the best parts of it. And Marcello simply says, "Yeah, I had the SOB killed, and I would do it again. He was a thorn in my side. I wish I could have done it myself." And Marcello went on to talk about setting up Jack Ruby in the bar business in Dallas, explained Jack Ruby's role as far as being the mafia's payoff man with the Dallas police. Marcello even admitted meeting, at least a couple of times, Lee Harvey Oswald. There are hundreds of hours of tapes, by the way, of Marcello talking about a variety of his crimes, and then the FBI covered it all up.
And there's another interesting, intriguing revelation in your book. And I've got to say, look, I've read many books on the Kennedy assassination, some of which support the conspiracy theories and others that don't. But one revelation that you make in the book is that the Kennedy brothers were 9 days away from staging a coup against Castro when JFK was killed. Now, that information has been kept secret for a very long time, hasn't it? I mean, it wasn't even revealed in the two government inquiries into the assassination.
That's correct. That was the biggest secret that the Kennedy associates revealed to us the first Kennedy associate we talked to was JFK's Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, and he revealed this secret plan to us back in 1990 and said it was so secret he didn't even know it was a real plan until right after JFK died, because, of course, the Bay of Pigs had been a big disaster because so many officials knew about it. And this was just a year, when Kennedy was killed, it was only a year after that tense nuclear standoff of the Cuban Missile Crisis. So the Kennedys knew they had to have a very, very, very secret plan or it would fail, and especially because it was just a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis, still at the height of the Cold War. So only about a dozen close Kennedy aides and officials knew about it, and several of them talked to us about it. And it was really a remarkable and ingenious plan, especially how it was going to be kept secret. They were working with the number three official in Cuba in 1963, the commander of the Cuban army, the most powerful black official in Cuba, a man by the name of Commander Juan Almeida. And he was going to arrange for Castro's elimination on December the 1st, 1963. And Fidel Castro would be killed in an open vehicle by riflemen. However, Almeida would not take the blame or the responsibility. Kennedy's death, from documents that we quote in the book, apparently was going to be blamed on a Russian or a Russian sympathizer. That would kind of help to neutralize the thousands of Russian troops that remained in Cuba. But the important fact is, it was never supposed to be revealed, not a month later, not a year later, not 10 years later, that the whole coup plan was the brainchild of John and Robert Kennedy.
That was a very high-risk plan. It seems to me that the Kennedy brothers were playing with fire.
Well, and playing with fire is a very good term, because that's the exact same term that Dean Rusk used when he spoke to Vanity Fair magazine about these events on the record shortly before his death. We had suggested that they contact him, because the Kennedys were also trying to pursue peace with Fidel Castro very hard that fall. People have never figured out before, well, why were they pursuing these secret back-channel peace negotiations so hard in the fall? Well, they would have loved to see a bloodless solution, a negotiated solution with Castro. However, they couldn't let this whole Cuba issue just remain unresolved, because you had the 1964 election coming in, and you had these hard right-wing hawks like Barry Goldwater and Richard Nixon, who were the likely opponents, and they were already bringing up the possibility that Soviet missiles remained in Cuba or had been brought back in. And that's why Dean Rusk said they were playing with fire, because at the same time, prosecuting the mafia, they had barred the mafia from any participation in the coup plan or from reopening their casinos. And unknown to the Kennedys, one CIA official, Richard Helms, had authorized a few CIA personnel to continue working with the mafia. And that's how Carlos Marcello and his associates, a dozen of his associates, were able to infiltrate this top-secret coup plan, and they were able to turn parts of that coup plan, from the way JFK was killed to the bullet found in Oswald's rifle, to use on JFK instead. And that they did that in a way so because they knew that would force Bobby Kennedy to work with his hated enemies, Lyndon Johnson and FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, to cover up so much information just to prevent World War III. Now, they all thought it might go ahead and prompt this invasion of Cuba that they knew was ready to go.
And speaking of Robert Kennedy, it's not been publicly known that he devoted the rest of his life to finding his brother's killers. Publicly, he accepted the Warren Commission conclusion that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole assassin. But privately, he believed that there was a conspiracy and the mafia and or the CIA were behind it. And he must have been ridden with guilt about that his pursuit of the mafia bosses led to his brother's murder. And he was a broken man, as you explain in Legacy of Secrecy. I'll just read a short passage from it. In the early months of 1964, Bobby continued to be overwhelmed by his brother's tragic murder. The lingering grief left him appearing wasted and gaunt. JFK aide John Sagenthaler says that Bobby seemed to be in physical pain, like a man on the rack. He walked for hours, brooding and alone. Bobby was consumed by keeping secrets he couldn't fully share with anyone. Decades later, after the congressional disclosures of the 1970s, a few of Bobby's friends began to realize some of what he had gone through.
And that is so true. We talked to so many people who worked with Bobby, and he was a broken man because he knew that somehow, he knew within hours, and he told it to a prize-winning journalist here in America, he knew within hours that somehow his top-secret plan had been compromised and someone connected with that, and later he learned through these secret investigations connected with the mafia and Marcello specifically, had been behind it. But Bobby knew, as the Attorney General of the United States, our highest law enforcement officer, Bobby had testified before our Congress just a couple months before JFK's death how hard it was to prosecute a mafia godfather for anything, let alone murder. And if it had ever become known that the Attorney General of the United States suspected the mafia or their close ally Jimmy Hoffa in his own brother's death, that would have been like handing a get-out-of-jail-free card to the mobsters that Bobby and the Justice Department were prosecuting, including people like Jimmy Hoffa. So he could never even let his suspicions become known, but he did conduct these secret investigations. They did eventually lead to Carlos Marcello, but here's why it had to be secret in 68, and 20 years later, Commander Almeida was not exposed after JFK's murder. He wasn't exposed the next year or the next decade. Castro did not realize or even suspect Commander Almeida until 1990. Commander Almeida disappeared for a few years. That's when, only then, did Dean Rusk and other Kennedy associates start talking to Tom and myself. But then after the fall of the Soviet Union, Commander Almeida had to reappear in Cuba because he was such a popular and revered figure.
And Commander Almeida is still a very high-ranking officer in Cuba, number three in charge. Why did you name him?
We weren't actually the ones to reveal his identity because we had promised our sources we would never do that. So when the hardback edition of Ultimate Sacrifice came out in 2005, I took an extra year to write the book so that we could tell a lot of the story without not only not identifying Commander Almeida, but without even pointing the finger of suspicion at him. What we did was write a lot about his close friend Che Guevara because their experiences were so similar. Naturally, the week the hardback was scheduled to come out, the National Archives, independently, on their own, in Washington, decided to declassify the first files describing Commander Almeida's secret work for JFK. So then I got to spend the next year rewriting Ultimate Sacrifice, putting in everything about Commander Almeida, because as one of our sources told us, you know, the best thing to do once the government, our government, had decided to release those files describing his work was to get the whole story out, because that way, you know, it couldn't be spun or misused. And so that book came out in the fall of 2006. Well, since that time, Commander Almeida has been more prominent in Cuba than ever.
Yeah, it's almost gone full circle, hasn't it?
And it could yet come full circle with President-elect Obama could wind up negotiating with Raul and Commander Almeida, bringing full circle what John F. Kennedy essentially gave his life for back in 1963. But it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what this is an evolving story that's going to keep developing in the months to come.
Lamar, your book is quite a read at almost 800 pages, I've got to say, but the level of detail is astounding. I know Tom Hartman, as you mentioned, who's a writer himself, helped you with the book. But how many researchers did you have working on it?
A lot of people who do these kinds of books, like Vincent Bugliosi, who did a book about the lone nut magic bullet theory, and others, have their researchers, and I even run into their researchers sometimes up at the National Archives. But I basically, you know, was my own researcher and had to do all the actual writing, and aside from Tom's help in the early years, all the actual research. But in another way, I have to say, there are dozens of people literally around the world, including in Australia, who simply provided invaluable help. And so I could not have done the book without, you know, without their assistance. And again, it's just amazing to be talking to someone like a researcher in Australia named Kate Willard, who did some amazing research about an early plot to kill JFK before Dallas that even involved Atlanta and Washington. It was called off. But, you know, to be talking to someone in Australia who has files from the U.S. National Archives, and they've put this together, and so many people had important small pieces of the puzzle. Several of the photographs in the book came from someone in Australia who lives on the Gold Coast. So again, it's just, you know, it's very much an international effort with dozens of people, not just in America, but around the world. And I'm the one who kind of, you know, collates and digs in and then has to write all those 850-some-odd pages.
Yes. And within those pages, there are many, many revelations, as we have said, and we could speak for hours. I should mention that you also expose the murders of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King in the book. But as we mentioned earlier, this is your second book on the JFK assassination. Now, the CIA is still withholding well over a million records related to it. That's despite a 1992 law requiring their release. The files on Martin Luther King, I understand, are tied up until 2029. So is this a subject matter that you will continue to write about as more files that will be released?
Well, I'll continue to pursue it and possibly write about it. This is very much an ongoing story because there are already efforts in Congress by associates of mine to look at finally getting those files open, because the law was passed in the United States Congress back around the time of the Oliver Stone movie. Now, that got 4.5 million files released, but then there are the files that you just mentioned. And as you also mentioned, legacy of secrecy documents, how all the government secrecy about President Kennedy's murder allowed three confessed conspirators to later help murder Martin Luther King. And some of those people also had ties to Robert Kennedy's assassination. So getting the JFK files released will not just help to finally answer the few remaining questions about that murder. It will also shed new light on the murders of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. And like I say, those efforts are going to be ongoing. So even as Legacy of Secrecy is published in Australia in 2009, that will really help people put into perspective both the efforts in the United States government to get those files released and what we're already hearing in America is going to be happening in terms of the U.S. and Cuba, because the events from 63 are the sole reason the United States has never made peace with Cuba the way the United States has with Vietnam or China, because the mafia planted information pointing to Fidel Castro, who had nothing to do with JFK's murder. But there have been government officials, there are still government officials and very prominent former officials who believe that Fidel was behind JFK's murder, and that's the excuse they have used for years not to normalize relationships. So if we get the files released, that removes the final impediment to finally normalizing relations between the United States and this tropical paradise that sits just 90 miles away from the United States.
What is it, Lamar, about this story that happened more than 40 years ago? What is it that intrigues you, that drives you to keep writing about it?
Well, you know, if I knew the answer, I would be glad to tell you. But, you know, you could just as easily ask, you know, those wonderful researchers in Australia or in England.
Yeah, but this is your second book about the Kennedy assassination.
Well, and again, I guess the other point I want to make, we're simply following in the footsteps of people who really picked up the torch from Bobby Kennedy. You know, when he died, there were a legion of researchers and former people who worked with him, some of whom knew Bobby, some of whom have never met Bobby Kennedy, and they devoted 10, 20, 30 years of their lives to researching and writing about this case. And some of those people never even published a book. They only researched it. They were all extremely generous when Tom and I began our work 20 years ago. So we kind of view ourselves as picking up the torch from them. They picked it up from Bobby Kennedy. And you know, I hate to say it, in a way, of course, Tom and I were part of the cover-up, because once Dean Rusk and others had entrusted us with this knowledge, but of course there were things we couldn't say, you know, it was kind of a burden at times, and to invest all this time and money for years.
Yes, but Lamar, you're a historian and you're a writer. You're also an American. So Is it that that drives you, the right, because you believe that people have the right to know what happened?
Certainly. In other words, you know, our Constitution, you know, talks about liberty and the freedom of the press, and the motto of our CIA, our Central Intelligence Agency, is the truth shall make you free. However, you know, the CIA has been withholding a lot of information. They're still withholding those 1 million records. So as someone who grew up during the time of Watergate and Vietnam, you know, where America had for several years just accepted blindly what was said, and then we saw how that turned out with Vietnam and with Watergate. You know, I grew up in that era, as did Tom, and so, you know, to us, we're all about, well, you know, the truth really will set you free. And there's this other aspect, too. There's a famous saying that those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And so if we never want to repeat those horrible mistakes of the past, we have to let everybody know that hidden history. You know, that's why we just want to drag the truth into the light as much as possible so that we never have to revisit those tragic events of the past.
Historian and writer Lamar Waldron speaking to the book show's Linda Lopresti. His book, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination, is published in the US by Counterpress. The Australian edition is due out here early next year, and the local publisher is Scribe.